Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is Paulette Young speaking, your host, along with Selena Lindsay. She is my co-host, and along with we're going to have some guest speakers that are phenomenal. That's also going to be part of the Fathers and Family Coalition of America upcoming conference, February 24th through the 27th. We have a John Van Epp that will be speaking, and Barbara, if I pronounce your last name correctly, Coloroso.
Coloroso, yeah.
Oh, okay. They will be speaking in a few minutes. So Fathers and Family Coalition of America is a nonprofit 501c3 established in 1996. Transitioned in 2010 as a national and international professional development advocacy agency. Dr. James Rodriguez is the CEO and founder of this organization, along with others. So tonight, what we're going to do is feature some of the speakers that will be talking at that great international convention, Fathers and Family Coalition of America. Right now we have Dr. John Van Elst on the line. Did I have someone from the 424? Is that James?
That's me. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, doing great, doing great. So what I'd like to do is start the program off with James, and then Dr. John Van Elp, you can speak next, and then followed by Barbara Coloroso. Okay, you're on, James. What I would like for you to talk about to, you know, start everything off is tell us about your background and what you do.
Well, appreciate it. Today, I know that Paulette Young has tirelessly advanced issues related to health and community and children and families. So tonight is an opportunity for us to start the kickoff for our 21st annual conference that will be hosted in February, the 24th through the 27th in Los Angeles, through Fathers and Families Coalition of America. My background is primarily in a clinical social worker, and my doctorate is in social work as well. But I left the clinical practice years ago and became an administrator and also a professor, looking at what our staff needed to implement good strategies, not perfect, but good strategies working with children and families, and particular a program for young mothers that were low income, and then one of the nation's first young fathers program. And I quickly learned that we were great at prescribing how to go get an education or goal setting for careers, but we were not hitting the heart of our young fathers. And so we kicked off what was supposed to be a one-time only conference at Mesa Community College in Arizona. And we had 600 people show up to that event, 400 registered and 200 students that thought the lunch was for free. So we did a great job, and I really didn't think we were going to go beyond this. And there had been other people who had been working in the 20-plus years trying to advance what was called healthy marriage and responsible fatherhood, and Dr. John Van Epp is one of those earlier pioneers as well who will be joining us. But we've continued, and I'm really excited about our conference called The Next Level. And The Next Level is about getting ourselves as individuals who work with children and families on a daily basis, not only professionally, more skills and more strategies, but also to look inwardly on how we can improve ourselves, increase our knowledge, our skills, our abilities, but also it's a place for parents to come and community leaders as well, as including policymakers. So this year, tomorrow, we will launch our opening of our conference, and I think it's just phenomenal. Every year, I don't think we could achieve what we've achieved the prior year, and this year we supersede from last. So we just keep building the momentum. And I'm very, very excited about the faculty coming from the United Kingdom, Australia, and throughout the United States, and the new partners that we have. Annie E. Casey Foundation is probably the nation's premier foundation on child welfare, foster care, and juvenile justice, and they've decided to be our title sponsors, which allows us to host this event in Los Angeles in February to bring in practitioners who couldn't afford it. And because of their contribution towards this event, we're going to have an opportunity for 50 young parents that are currently in the foster care system to come sit in on Barbara or John or others' sessions, and they're going to come as our guests. They don't have to pay a registration fee. And it's because of that, along with the state of California First Five and the state of California Endowment and Data Caliper and others that allow us to put on this event. And now I think it's going to take off, and as it says, the title of the theme, to the next level. So this is a place, if you're in early childhood, criminal justice, marriage and family therapists or practices, social work, a plethora of talented and experts in the field, and I'd rather hear from John or Barbara, but we are going to have a phenomenal event, and I'm excited. Both John and Barbara are featured speakers at our conference. Barbara on our first day as a talk presenter. We're not going to put a lot of pressure on her. She is a TED Talk speaker before, but she gets to do it again with us at Fathers and Families Coalition America. And then John is going to be one of the first ever fireside chat speakers that we have. We're going to create more of an intimate general session, bringing in people who both experienced going through adversity and trauma, as well as those who have assisted those going through that transformational process. And I believe those sessions are all going to be transcending. So I'm excited, and I think that's good enough.
Okay, that sounds great. You also are putting on a workshop. You want to share with us what that workshop is about?
Well, one of my colleagues, Dr. Navier Barker Brown from Georgia, and I, and a couple others, years ago, we wrote a curriculum to help people implement parent education curriculums or healthy relationship curriculums or fatherhood curriculums, because a lot of the staff that implement these programs at the community-based level have not experienced an opportunity to learn how to teach with others and how to be interconnected. And so we based it off of a book called The Courage to Teach, and we built off of that. And then we built it off with the Council of Social Work Education, some skills that you need for competencies. And over the time, it's led to about 1,000 people going through our credential program throughout the United States, and as far as a gentleman coming from Japan who watched it online one year, and the next year he came in person with a system, an app on his phone, so he could hear us live in person and teach that, and he used his translator system, which was awesome. And we've had people come from Pakistan and Africa and Ireland and Italy, but it's a great time where we limit the amount of people in our credentialing program. We only let 30 to 50 people. We don't want to have 100 or 200 people or 300, because we really want to make it a time for an intimate learning experience where we all learn together. Navier and myself, or Obi and Edwin, we're learning with the people who are coming. And we take those experiences and we build off of it, and then they can get a credential that has been approved by the National Association for Social Workers. And that's on Monday, February 24th, and then the next day our conference starts on the 25th all the way through the 27th, and it culminates in a wonderful red tie, red dress gala where we honor couples and we honor fathers and leaders that are making a difference in the community.
Great. Great information. That was Dr. James Rodriguez, and he is the CEO of Fathers and Family Coalition of America. It's going to be a great conference. Next, I would like to hear from Dr. John Van Epp. If you can at least tell us a little bit about your background and what you do.
Sure. So it's great to talk to you here, Paulette, and James, nice hearing all the wonderful things that you've been doing. And we just want to thank you for keeping this conference going after that first is only going to be a one time. I didn't know that before, but that's many times how great things happen is you step out by faith and do something one time, and then you realize that it really meets a phenomenal need, and all of a sudden it multiplies into 20 years plus. So congratulations to that. And all that congratulations to you on all your successes with your work as well. I know that you've had some real big successes here recently. You're very welcome. Yeah, my background was in Ohio for about 25 years. I had a private practice. I was involved in a counseling practice for both individuals and couples and families. I also was an adjunct professor during that time in marriage and family studies. So my background is in psychology. My PhD is in psychology. I just saw the need in the mid-90s to translate a lot of what is done in a clinical setting more to the practical, you might say almost like the combination between a classroom and a retreat. So something in between what would happen in a classroom, what would happen in a retreat, and what would happen in therapy. So I took many things that had been developed, a model that I had developed on relationships, and began writing programs. So the first one that I wrote was how to avoid falling in love with a jerk or a jerkette. And that was based on what I took as hundreds of research studies that predicted what a person would be like in a committed relationship. And I took those and grouped them into five categories and put them in a model of relationship bonds as the first bond of what to get to know about somebody. And felt like if we could just empower singles to have the target areas of what to get to know while they that really tell them what this person is like, what their character is like, what their heart is like, what they will be like in terms of like relationship potential. How are they going to act in a relationship? We don't educate singles, and this includes women and men. We really don't educate them on how to choose partners successfully and build relationships from the ground up in successful ways. And as a result, we have lots and lots of disasters in relationships. In fact, I would say in the U.S., in the broad culture, we have a major relationship crisis going on, and it goes across the board. So really from the mid-90s, my passion was to take all that I had experienced in the academic classroom and in the therapy room and translate it into practical programs that people could learn from online, from certifying people to be able to teach these programs with workbooks, on and on. And that's what I've been doing since for now about 25 years.
Wow, that's a long time. A lot of experience.
But it's been really wonderful.
I would like for you to tell the audience for the upcoming conference, you're a speaker, and I believe you're putting on a workshop. Can you share with us some information about that?
I sure can. So I'm doing two workshops, and they're on two of the programs that I have. And when I say programs, these are courses that are certification courses. So I do travel around the country and then internationally, and I conduct certification trainings in my programs for organizations typically that would bring me in and have a number of people that they would want in their organization to be trained to go out into the community, usually is what it is. And they are a lot of times nonprofits or organizations that have funding from state or federal funds for healthy relationships, fatherhood grants, things like that. So one program that I have is specifically for singles. And you might say, well, how does that fit in? So I already gave you a little bit about that program, but I'm doing a workshop on it to review it and to give people a discount if they have interest in the certification course. So if they come to my workshop, How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk or Jerkette, they will learn about this program. We've had multiple research studies published on it. It's been used everywhere from high school settings. Over 100,000 high school kids have gone through this program very successfully. We had a phenomenal research study done with emerging adults, which would be about age 18 until maybe 30. And we had positive effectiveness of this program in helping them know how to develop both a healthy relationship as well as be a healthy partner and choose a healthy partner. These are extremely important things for singles to learn. We've had it used in, did I mention prisons, high schools, community initiatives. It's used with divorce groups. And one of the keys that I would say when it comes to this conference, which focuses a lot on fathers, is that some of the crisis that is happening with fathers' involvement with children is a crisis of coupling. How do people couple up? How do they form a relationship? For example, those that are age about 22 to 34, that generation has been studied pretty in depth from 22 to maybe 34 all the way up to age 38. So about a 15-year cohort. A couple things I would just tell you, Paulette, that are really striking about that. 55% of all babies born to that generation are born to moms that are not married. And depending on which specific, you know, nationality or segment of the country we look at, it goes from 55% up to 80%. The second thing I would tell you is that when they have studied this, these moms, when they have the baby and they're asked, are you going to marry the father of this child? Over 50% of them say, absolutely, we're going to get married. But in a five-year study, only 16% of them had married the baby's father, and over 65% of them had moved on to another relationship. And we have serious, you know, what is really disturbing about that is they thought everything was great in their relationship when they were pregnant and having the baby and after the baby was born, but 84% of those relationships failed. We have a major crisis long before pregnancy or marriage. We've got to get, especially men, to have a plan of how to do relationships better and not just find themselves in a situation where the woman they're with is pregnant, she has a baby, and next thing you know, 5 years later, they're on to another relationship, having another woman get pregnant. This becomes a crisis in America, and it is not a crisis of any specific race. It's a crisis of middle America. It's a crisis of our country. So that program is an extremely important program that needs to be pushed out, that you might say is helping people to develop a plan for how to successfully do relationships before they actually get into relationships. So this becomes crucial for, you know, going upstream, you might say. And I think it addresses a lot of the issues that come as after effects. I work a lot with the military, Paulette, and you know, the colonels and the generals I talk to in the military, they call it left of boom and right of boom. So if boom is the explosion, right of boom is what happens after the explosion. Left of boom is what you do to prevent the bomb from going off. And I say we've got lots and lots of programs that are right of boom. But this program, how to avoid falling in love with a jerk or jerkette, or how to avoid being a jerk or jerkette, this is a left of boom program that has great research behind it. It's evidence-based, been around for a lot of years, and been updated with current research all along. But it really helps people to actually have a plan to do relationships in a successful way.
Wow, I love the information you gave. Okay.
You're very welcome.
One question I have that I know you have the program. I want to say, what about junior high and high school? Should they have programs like that at the lower level before people
at what level
off?
Most of the organizations that push it out on a high school level, because we have a youth version, we have an adult version, we have a military version, we have a lot of different versions of this. Of course, I have the book that McGraw-Hill published called How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. And then we have an online course for individuals to use. So we really are kind of covering it all. But the organizations that take it into high schools usually take it at the freshman level, which is 14 years old. And that's kind of a critical age. There's a lot of immaturity at that age. So those that take it at the junior, senior level see dramatic differences in how the kids just are like in tune with everything in the course. But it becomes a real preventative step in the freshman level. So I always like if they could try to do it on both, you know, freshman and senior, you know, and just have them repeat the course. But anyway, they're trying to go as upstream as they can. I would say if you try to go a little earlier, you start to get some real mixed you get mixed results from parents. That I don't know if they always want these things being talked about, even though they should be. But I'll tell you about one other at the Fathers and Family Conference, I have a program called Home Run Dads, and that's another certification course. Again, if they come to the workshop, they learn about the program. It's specifically a parenting course for dads, and it's also been founded on research as well as supported by research showing its effectiveness. But it's a real fun course. It has, in a way, it uses kind of that language of sports, how dads can think of themselves like the best of coaching, and a lot of qualities that coaches do, how they instill pride in their team, how they build trust, how they really know their players and have a plan to develop each player individually. These are concepts that are embedded in the course to help dads know how to relate to their kids with this kind of positive template of thinking about themselves as a coach, having a plan for each of their kids. We even have them do something like making a family pennant where they put the name of their family and think about what really would be the pride of their family. And we encourage them to do this with their kids and kind of pull them all together so they can make a statement on that pennant, kind of like what a baseball team or a sports team might have, that really captures the heart of their family and what their family values, their family beliefs are really all about. So that Home Run Dads, again, is certification course. All my certification courses can be done at home. That's one of the advantages of them. I do live trainings, but they all have a way to just get the program, the certification course, watch the videos take an online test and be certified long distance in the privacy of your own home. And that saves people a lot of money. It's hard a lot of times to go to a training, you know, and put out all that money to spend a night someplace. And so we've tried to make it really accessible to everybody by having certification courses that can provide at-home training.
That sounds great. Thank you. You gave a lot
of
information.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about all this stuff. It's a real passion of mine,
much needed.
I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. The next person we're going to have up is Barbara Colarosa. Barbara, are you still there?
I am, and I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to everybody.
Yes, a lot of good information. So I'm asking you also, tell us a little bit about your background and what you do.
Yes, I've been at my work as an educator and then a university instructor and as a consultant throughout the world. I've been on every continent but Antarctica. So it's been a real joy to work with diverse cultures and the like. My main work stemmed from my first book, Kids Are Worth It. It's about mealtime and bedtime and chores and sibling rivalry and allowances and potty training and getting your kid out of the local jail. I talk about the basics of parenting because it can happen to any of us. Kids have free will and peer pressure. And how do we raise responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings who know how to stand up for values and against injustices, who are not easily led, who don't do to please, who have what Carl Sagan said all three-year-olds have, the gift of skepticism and wonder, the wow and the why. You know, the little three-year-old, it's why and wow. And I'd love for our 16-year-olds to be able to have that same gift, the skepticism and wonder retained from their early years. So they are less likely to harm themselves or harm others if they have that sense of wonder. And then the skepticism, when their friends say, let's go vandalize that building, your son would be able to say, why on earth would I do that? Questioning and the like. So I'll be talking about raising that kind of child, what we need as parents to do, and our extended community. We're all in this mess together. As an educator and a parent, I can see that. I have three grown kids and three grandchildren. If anybody told me how great that was, I might have skipped parenting and just moved on to the grandparenting. But I'll be addressing that as well as how important extended family is to children. So when things are going awry in their nuclear family, which may be turning nuclear at that point, that they have safe harbor with aunts and uncles and nieces and nephews and with grandma and grandpa. And so how we can go about doing that, no matter what the structure of our family is. And then I'm going to combine that as part of the keynote with The Bully, the Bullied, and the Not-So-Innocent Bystander, which is the title of one of my other books. And I think it's so important today that we recognize that bullying is not normal, natural, or necessary as conflict is. And what is the difference between normal, natural, and necessary conflict and bullying? Conflict, you help young people resolve. Bullying, we must stop. Because conflicts happen. The next time your children fight, first thing I want to say is they're normal. Children who don't fight grow up to make lousy spouses. If anyone in the audience is married to somebody who won't enter into any kind of conflict, you know what I'm talking about. Keep the peace. Don't let it go. Don't bring it up. Let it go. It isn't a healthy way to deal in relationships. And so we look at conflict and how to help young people learn to resolve their conflicts nonviolently. Because as Liz Loescher said, conflict is inevitable, violence is not. But then I move on to bullying and how it differs from conflict. Two kids fighting over a TV program or a soccer ball, they're both upset, they're both angry, they're both frustrated, and you can work with them to resolve that. But bullying, the one sibling has the other sibling's arm up the back, and it's not a yoga pose. And you rush in there as the younger one's screaming, but as soon as the older one sees you coming, they drop their brother's arm and start comforting him. And you say, what are you screaming like that for? And the way the older one looks at the younger one, because bullying has to do with intimidation, he knows if he says anything right now about his older sister, he's going to be in a lot of trouble when you leave. Because it tends to happen under the radar of adults. So the child says, nothing, Mom, nothing. You say, well, quit screaming. Or nothing, Dad, nothing. Well, quit screaming. We have just retargeted that poor kid who's being targeted by a sibling. But if we step back, when we walked in there, we saw something we wished we hadn't seen. We saw our daughter smile as she was harming her brother. That's bullying, a conscious, willful, deliberate activity intended to harm, where you get pleasure from somebody else's pain. It's nothing like conflict. And I'll be talking about the four ways and three means of bullying. It can be a one-time significant event. Once in the toilet ought to count. Once called a gross sexual or racial or ethnic term matters. Once locked out of a chat room intentionally hurts. And so it can be a one-time event. It can be continuous and repeated, which is the traditional way we speak of it, but that's only the second way. Hazing is another one, and fathers can be a great help to their sons and daughters with this, and making sure that any programs their kids are in, not just athletic, but any programs, that hazing is never allowed. It's diminishing a young person's sense of self, doing humiliating, degrading things to themselves or to others in order to join a group. That sense of belonging is so powerful. And the last one is one we're all going crazy with today, and that's digital or cyber or technology-enhanced electronic bullying. And so those four ways are exhibited by three means: verbal, physical, or relational. And verbal is the most common. And I want to impress on fathers and families how important it is that we deal immediately with verbal tormenting of another human being. Martin Buber said, I am I and you are thou. I'm unique and you're unique. And we have a common humanity. That's the we. We're interdependent, interconnected, interrelated, as Archbishop Desmond Tutu said. In bullying, I'm an I and you're an it. I dehumanize you. And once I've dehumanized you with ugly names, then it's far easier for me to move on to more dangerous and more ugly kinds of targeting. The premise of my work, I also work in Rwanda with orphans from the 94 genocide. And when I put that my book out, Extraordinary Evil, a lot of reporters said to me, but I thought your work was in parenting and education. I said, where do you think it starts? Because as far as I'm concerned, it is a short walk from hateful rhetoric to hate crimes to crimes against humanity. And I have to say, in our own country, we are no longer on that walk. We're on a bullet train. And we need to be aware of the cultural climate that our kids are swimming in, where it becomes so easy to dehumanize another human being. And again, once I dehumanize you, I can do anything to you and not feel the normal shame or compassion. So I want to impress on people in attendance how important it is to discern the difference between those two. So we have verbal, physical, which, by the way, is the least amount done. Boys fight a lot. And they also threaten, but that's verbal bullying. And fighting is not bullying. But when they do resort to physical bullying, often the results are very easy to see. The others are less likely to be seen. And very few girls resort to it, although that's on the rise today. But they don't need to. They have in their social arsenal something far more powerful. And that's relational or social bullying. That's shunning and rumor and gossip and exclusion and isolation. And so we have to look at that for the devastation it truly is. I was arguing with some people recently as I was helping them develop our state law and revamp it on bullying. They did not want to include that relational bullying. Say, well, that's too hard to define. And the man who I was sitting next to, his son had killed himself. And he said, no, wait a minute. That's the kind of targeting that just drove my son over the edge. So it's real important that we look at that social or relational bullying as well. And what can we do? And what are the signs? And what not to do? Those are the things I'll be discussing that I feel very passionate about. Because if we don't stop this dehumanization of another human being, turning people into its with our language, then we will devolve as human beings, not evolve, but devolve. Into our camps and tribes and be mean and cruel to the point of destroying one another. And so I'll be addressing that, but more importantly, I'll be talking about how do you raise that kid who in the high-status social bully says to all the other girls in grade 8, I don't like the new girl. You want to be in my group? Don't eat lunch with her. I want your daughter to be the one to say, that's mean, that's cruel, and have the courage to go sit next to the new girl. But she will do that at cost. There's not going to be any scratches and stickers and stars, catch and being good awards or lunch with the principal. What she'll probably get is, oh, Miss Goody Two-Shoes, or you're next. And I want your son, when his friends are targeting somebody in the locker room because of that child's race or religion or gender or physical or mental ability, economic status, I want your son to be the one to say, leave him alone. But he'll probably get, oh, what, do you just like him? Are you chicken? But how, again, do we raise that kid? Well, it starts with you and me. How do you and I treat hired help? How do you treat the person going through the grocery store a little slower than you'd like them to? How do you treat that new neighbor who looks different than you, has a different language as their first language, has different foods, different ways of dressing, a different faith tradition? Our children are watching. And what about that bigoted relative at the family gathering? Now, we all have bigoted relatives somewhere on the family tree. It's just that some aren't on the branches yet. They're right there at that dinner table spewing bigoted comments, thinly disguised as jokes. Can your children hear you saying, I'm bothered by that, or that's racist, or that's sexist? When all the other relatives roll their eyes and say, what, can't you take a joke? Not that kind. And you know you've had an impact when you walk back in the dining room and everybody shuts up. But you've had a bigger impact when your mother says to you in front of your children, but it's Uncle George, he's old. Hey, I'm 72. That would be old to a lot of people. And old is never an excuse for bigotry and intolerance. And can you say to your mother, when she says, but it's Uncle George, he's old, Mom, I don't want my children to ever believe that it's okay to demean another human being that way. Okay. If you do that,
what I'm
if you're
do
willing
is
to stand up.
I want, I have also Wendy Talley that's going to have to leave and not be able to be on the broadcast.
Oh, okay, well.
And then
I will
come
end
back
that with just saying that our modeling matters. And I'll be talking about that.
Okay, so we're not finished. So then I'm going to bring you back on. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Obviously, I can talk forever.
Okay, Wendy, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear
Hi.
Me?
Go ahead. Just give the audience a little bit about your background and then what your workshop is going to consist of at this upcoming national conference.
Well, first, I want to just give thanks to Mr. Rodriguez for giving me the opportunity to, you know, be a part of this workshop, being it my first academic workshop. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity and choosing me to be a part of these amazing people, especially the two that are on the phone. Just listening to the both of you, you have such an amazing buffet of talent. I'm just honored to be in your presence. And thank you, Ms. Young, for the opportunity, you know, just to even talk to your global audience, you know, about what it is that I'm bringing to the table and just being a part of this amazing conference. So I just need to, you know, just say that and give honor to that. So, again, my name is Wendy Talley, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker with the state of California. And May 15th of next year, 2020, I will be Dr. Talley with a doctorate in social work. So I'm really excited about that coming from USC. So I'm looking for that to just really just grace my next set of business cards. So I've been in the field of mental health for the last almost 20 years. And I've had my private practice now for almost 5 years, but on and off in private practice for the last 10 years. I have also an experience working with veterans with the West Los Angeles VA here in Los Angeles, California. And my father was a POW, Korean War veteran. So I have a heart for veterans, and just really understanding what they're going through has always been a part of that. So I branched out and became my own entrepreneur, started my private practice with my founder, co-founder, Keandra Jackson. And so we really have grown that practice from just us two in one small room into a private practice now of 9 clinicians, licensed and interns. And we do consulting, and we do speaking engagements and all of sorts. So we're really excited about that. And our parent company, the Lease Consulting Group, has worked with Sony Pictures. I am the first therapist on the Sony Pictures lot in Culver City, so I actually service their talent and their employees. I work with larger behavioral organizations as well, like Sharp Mental Health and Barber and Floyd, and I've also worked with LA Metro. And all of that, I work with a lot of the management teams that work with individuals that are clinicians or interns that work in the field. And so my passion is about safety, and that really came to me when I was working with veterans. And so what I'm going to be bringing to the table is a workshop called Community Safety for Mental Health Professionals. And we're looking at all aspects of just looking at how do we stay safe while providing services, and understanding that we can never let our guard down. And safety, it fluctuates. Risk is always there, and we need to be making sure that we are always, you know, aware of our surroundings, making sure we know about our clients, and making sure we're getting proper service. So I will be doing a great workshop on that and just talking about from every aspect of mental health, how to stay safe in the community, in your workplace as well. And I will also be providing those that sign up, will be emailing them a certificate of completion so they can add that to their resume, because we need those little nuggets to be able to move, you know, through our career. So that's what I will be providing for each and every person there at the workshop. So I'm really excited about being there. I'm really excited about safety, and I'm looking forward to meeting everyone there, you know, at the conference in February.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Wendy.
Thank you.
Okay. And we'll hear from you again.
Yes. Anytime.
Okay. All right, Barbara, I know I kind of cut you off because I know Wendy has to leave or whatever, and so I wanted to hear a little bit about what she was going to say to us. So if
yes,
you want to.
Yes, and I, you know, I could talk
that
on forever, as you know. I speak for a living.
So time is on our hands. We have 17 minutes. I want to ask if there's anybody in the audience that have a question, this is the time, either to Barbara, to Dr. Van Epp, or to Dr. James Rodriguez, you can ask that, those questions. If not, I'm going to go ahead and let Barbara finish where she left off. If there's no questions. Okay, Barbara, go ahead.
All right. Well, I basically have summed up how what I'm going to be talking about and how I'll go about talking about what to do if we make some mistakes when our kids are targeted. And I learned this as a parent and as an educator. And then what to do if we find out that our child has been one of the not-so-innocent bystanders. There's three characters in this tragedy: the bully, the bullied, the targeted kid, and the not-so-innocent bystanders. William Burroughs said it so beautifully. There are no innocent bystanders. What were they doing there in the first place? Either they were being the bully's henchman, their active supporter, their passive supporter. their disengaged onlooker, the potential witness is afraid to step in, or the fourth character, which is how all of my work ties together, and that's raising that witness, resistor, defender, the brave-hearted kid who will step in the lunchroom, who will step in the locker room, online, is willing to say, look, leave that kid alone. I don't want to lock him out. I don't want to be a part of this game if we're going to be treating other kids that way. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of heart to be able to do that. So it starts very, very young with something very, very simple, giving the kids the opportunities to make choices, decisions, and mistakes that are age-appropriate and ability-appropriate. And I start with little things like red pajama, blue pajama. And when dads at this conference can hear how very simple it is, you know, we can either be very brick wall in our parenting or very jellyfish, or as I call it, backbone parenting, where we're flexible, but we also provide a structure. So you don't say to the two-year-old, do you want to go to bed or not? At least I wasn't saying that to mine. But I do say, do you want to go to bed now with your red pajamas or now with your blue pajamas? And they show up with red bottoms, blue tops. And I've always said, if it's not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, let it go. And it is not life-threatening to wear red top and blue bottoms. So you let that go. And they're beginning to see that even at two, I have agency in my life, that what I do matters, that I can make some decisions. Do you see how that begins to lay that foundation for a child being able to say, I see a kid's being hurt. I see a kid who's being left out. I can make a difference. I can do something. Not only I can, I must, not I should, or which is brick wall, or maybe I will if they're my friend, but I must. That's that must inside of us to relieve somebody else's suffering and wishing them well, which, by the way, is the antithesis of bullying, where you're getting pleasure from somebody else's pain. So I try to bring it down to the very young, but also through the teen years. And I've had many a middle school parent say to me, look at this kid. He was such a good kid. He was so well-behaved, so well-mannered, so well-dressed. Now look at him. And I look at the kid and I get to know the parents. They say, you know what? He hasn't changed. And they go, what? And he hasn't changed. From the time he was little, he dressed the way you told him to dress. He acted the way you told him to act, said the things you told him to say. He's been listening to somebody else tell him what to do. He's been doing it. He hasn't changed. He's still listening to somebody else tell him what to do. Problem is, isn't you anymore. It's his peers. He hasn't learned how to think. So we need to look at, and I will, look at the antidotes to hating other human beings, hoarding, me, mine, and more, and harming through lying and cheating and stealing. The three H's, the most virulent agents ripping apart the fabric of our humanity today. And the antidotes to that is to care deeply, share generously, and help willingly. And the more we can help our young people do that on a daily basis, to care deeply. I tell kids you don't have to like every kid in this classroom, but you must honor their humanity and care enough about them that if they're hurting, that you must, in your sense of self, relieve that other person's pain or grief, that we're there to relieve that suffering. So to care deeply, share generously of your talents and your resources, and the funds that you have. I've taught my kids from the time they were young, you spend, save, and give to those who have less than you have. That's what you do with the money that you have. But it's also of your talent. And then the third one is to help willingly. Not only chores around the house, but you're an important, responsible member of the family. We're counting on you to do chores. But as a community member as well, you're a responsible member of this community. And you see a piece of trash, you pick it up and throw it in the trash can. But I didn't do it. It's not a matter of I didn't do it. There's trash on the ground, and what do you do? So I'll be talking about raising those responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings. It's not beyond any of us, whether we're a young parent with lots of energy and little wisdom or an older parent with lots of wisdom and a whole lot less energy. We're all in this together. And we can raise those kids to stand up for values and against injustices. In a democracy, it's a must.
Yes. And so a lot of things are aimed at the parents, right? Because If the parents don't know what to do, then how will the child ever know?
And that's why it's so important to have a conference like this, because they're also training trainers to help parents be better parents than we are. And I remember when we struggled with one of our kids, and both my husband and I are in this field, and we called a counselor friend up, and he said, oh, Barb, you know how to handle it. I said, no, you have to understand, things are not working out so good. And what it was our middle one just needed to be heard and listened to by somebody else. And we had to sit there and be humbled and realize that we hadn't listened as much to the middle one as we should have. So all of us, if we need help, we need to know it's okay to get help. To be willing to learn from others their mistakes and the gifts that they have. I mean, both of the speakers on here, the research they've done and the work they've done in developing it over the years, we need to be able to dip into that resource because we can't be just winging it.
I asked that question because I remember a class that I was teaching at college once, and I was telling the mothers the importance of teaching their daughters in making right choices. And the mother raised her hand. She said, how can I teach my daughter if I don't know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's so critical, that's why I like seeing it in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead. James?
Barbara, I wanted to share that I think, because I know we're running out of time, and I don't know if you have people who want to ask questions, but at the core of our conference, I was asked, why is this conference theme called The Next Level? And I said, you know, there was a gentleman named Viktor Frankl, and he wrote a book called
yes.
Man's Search for Meaning. And it's a book that very powerful. It's written in two different places. Once when he was experiencing a deep adversity in a Nazi camp, but then the second, like a postscript. But he wrote, self-actualization is possible only as a side effect of self-transcendence. And all of the professionals who are coming get a little bit more self-transcendence so that they can give that to other people. And we all learn from each other. And that's why I shared, perhaps Dr. Barker and I maybe have 70-plus years of experience in social work, but we're students. So we don't come in as those with the experts. We're just one of the knowers, equal in our responsibility for the goal of letting love have the last word so that a child could feel that love. And then when they have that love, because the mother and the father can get along. And that's why this year's conference, I think, is going to be so powerful. And just the way that it's been set up, the tremendous speakers, it's just very different from the past. And that's fine, because each time we're building off one experience from another experience. And that's what it is. It's not a conference. It's not an event. It's an experience. And so I hope that everyone that comes will have a time where they get a little bit of their own self-transcendence so that they can go impart that with other individuals. And like I'm going to make my to-do list of which sessions I'm going to sit in at least half and then half. And I'm going to ask some of my members on the board of directors to do the same, because I really would like us to take a moment and use it for ourselves. And Paula, you volunteered at our conference last year. You know, it's very busy. I don't want to say it's chaotic, but it's moving, it's fluid.
Yeah.
And I feel that if you don't take a moment, then how are you going to not take the great tools that John or Wendy or Barb are going to give to help good relationships get great? Or even if it's a very fragmented relationship, how can it start to become whole? And whether that's a husband and wife, practitioners, organizations, even leaving the state of Washington last week with their Interagency Fatherhood Council, the government is struggling on developing a concept of how to engage fathers. And they said, we got to build the capacity of fathers. So I couldn't help myself. And I said, how could you build someone else's capacity? How can you really empower someone else? You model that, you mirror that, but you cannot change someone else's life. You're part of the process. And I feel like all of the individuals, because I had a big smile on my face listening to the three of them, they're actually imparting that common word that I said, that let love have the last word, because a lot of people don't hear it, and a lot of people don't implement it in their practices. And unfortunately, many practitioners have become so tied down with just process that they have forgotten how to dream. And I think that that's one of the things that we're going to have at our conference that will help people go to their own personal and professional next level.
That sounds great. All the speakers, all of you, you just have greatness in you, and I really appreciate you've given the information that you've given tonight. And a lot of people throughout the United States would have heard this message. And not just here, because the broadcast goes on an international basis from various countries, as far as India, China. I don't know all the countries yet, but some of it shows up on my board where the people that are listening. Sometimes from time to time, I have more listeners than I actually a person calling in. But that's okay, as long as they have the information and they can carry it in their circles. I think that's very important. I believe I have Phyllis McNeil on the line.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. Did you have any questions you want to ask the guests?
Well, I was listening to them. They have some powerful information. And where the world is going right now, we need to hear that. It's going to be a powerful workshop. From the people I heard tonight, they have powerful information. And we adults and kids and, you know, family providers need to be at that workshop. And I'm going to be there, and I plan on getting empowered by the message that I receive to help others, because we have to change the way.
I know you want a program for today, but tell them who you are.
Well, I'm an affiliated member with Fathers and Families Coalition of America, and I have a nonprofit called Straight Talk. And I will be one of the presenters there, too, on a workshop on mentoring, and mine is based around faith, because I really like what the presenters were saying tonight. We got to change the way we deal with people in the community, you know, act of kindness, the bullying, and I love the things that they were talking about, how to get kids to stand up right. Don't be a part of the problem. Be a part of the solution, and they have to learn that at home, because some of those hatred behavior is taught from the parents.
So, again, it goes back.
I agree.
But then if you can't reach the parents, can you still reach a child?
Yes, you can reach the child. Uh-huh. Yeah, because sometimes the child can retrain the parent because of some of the unacceptable behavior that the parent is displaying at home. It's not good for the kid, you know, and I've dealt with kids and parents like that. You know, we want A and B students. I was looking for some A and B parents. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Selena, are you still on the line? Selena,
yes, I am.
Hi.
Yes,
you
I
have
am.
For the panel, did you have any questions for Barbara or?
No, I don't. They are fantastic, and they're doing the work, and that's what we like to see. Is those that what I call get out there and till the fans and till the fields, and then we hope to reap from the crop.
That's true. Okay. Is there anything else you want to say, James, before I close the program?
No, but I want to say thank you to Wendy and to John and Barbara, and I'm glad that Phyllis called in. And to you, Paulette, and for anyone that wants to be involved, you can go to Fathers and Families Coalition. .org. And this year, if it was not the kind of sponsorship we've got from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, the California Endowment, the state of California, we would have to have rates more like large national conferences. But their generosity has allowed us to make it affordable for everyone that's a professional who wants to come. And we will have an opportunity, especially for those in Southern California, for you to bring someone as a guest that's a young father, young mother, that has either currently in or recently age transitioned out of foster care. And I think that that's just a wonderful gift to give someone who has gone through a lot of adversity that some of us never ever would want to experience or could believe could happen from their short life. Because we know that the majority of young kids in foster care, 80% of them are going to go back after they leave foster care into another system, and that's the criminal justice system, and they will be incarcerated. But just like John said, 16%, we can change things, but it's up to us to change it. And so I'm very grateful for all of the faculty members, all the volunteers, the staff, and thank you, Ms. Young, for hosting this as a little kickoff for our 21st Annual Families and Fathers Conference. I'm really excited about the conference, February 24th through the 27th in Los Angeles at the Hilton LAX Hotel.
Yes, well, thank you, James, and thank you, all great speakers, and we'll all be there, being able to.
And thank you,
know,
Paulette.
Yes,
thank you for hosting
you.
Us.
So powerful. I just really appreciate and very supportive of what you're doing. And, you know, everybody needs to know this stuff, and, you know, not just here in the United States, but around the world. So I thank all of you for, you know, laboring the way you do and being willing to come on the program. Thank you. We'll be on again next Tuesday with some more speakers that will be part of the conference. All right. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.